Hi, welcome to the Mirror Bun Podcast. I'm Jeff Rigler, and I'm here with Sam.
Sam Bakely, yeah.
And Phil Hauser.
All right. Well, hey, guys. And Phil, thanks for joining our crew tonight.
Excited to have you.
Man, there's a lot going on. I don't know if you've seen any of the free games on Epic, but Cat Quest 2 is available for free for download. Cat Quest 2.
There you go. Oh my gosh. I have not been into the free Epic games at all this week, or in the last couple weeks, honestly. And even if I did get one, I don't think it would stand out among my library of hundreds of free games that Epic has been kind enough to give me over the last like couple of years.
So wait, what the hell? They keep doing it, you know?
Oh my god.
Wait, what the hell is Cat Quest? this is the first time I'm hearing about dogs
living together.
Damn.
In complete harmony. No, it's an RPG though of cats and dogs in a fantasy realm, according to Cat Quest 2. Now, okay. I have not played Cat Quest 1, but I think I can, you know, I think I can safely, you know, just jump into this and kind of figure it out. You know what I mean?
There you go.
Oh my gosh. I'm loving these screen. I'm going to actually download
this. I like the sprites.
I'm loving these screenshots. It is so cool. This is very like old school RPG, you know, senior sprites kind of wander around the, you know, the very static universe. I love it. This is awesome.
Oh, hell cool. Yeah. All right, cool. I'm liking it. It looks like fun. I'm kind of wondering if there's any voice acting. That'd be kind of funny though. Just do voice acting, but just only cat noises, you know, have like text at the bottom, but just have them speaking cat, you know, I don't even know if that's a thing.
I'm on board with it. And I'm actually seeing like these cat themed games have been quite popular recently. I mean, I was seeing now, obviously you guys know I'm on Reddit all the time. I was seeing for a long time on the main subreddit, a guy was developing a game about cats living on an island in Maine and having to waking up one day and all the humans are missing and trying to figure out where the humans went. So I think that these like cat themed games are very popular these days.
Absolutely. But I want to say with Cat Quest though, there are dogs in this as well though.
We need the representation. Honestly, my dog would feel really happy to know this is the case.
Yeah, I think for Rex's sake, I just wanted to throw that in there, man. I thought I would do that for you, Sam.
No, it's important that he feels represented. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Phil, you don't know, but Sam has a great dog named Rex that
oh damn. Cool.
Yeah, cool. Shout out to Rex.
Beautiful chocolate lab. He's asleep right now, so it's making my life a lot easier right now.
They are just, I tell you what, they are incredibly good at like begging for treats. So, you know, you got a real one. Yeah. I like them a lot. Honestly, I'm like totally into dogs. Like I've had mostly just if I've had dogs, like the only breed that I've had primarily is like boxers. So they all like, boxers. Yeah, they're all like really goofy. You know, they just like to talk at you. They're not like as insane as like huskies who just like they have to talk all the time, but you know, they'll talk at you. So
I guess what we're thinking is like there is definitely in these Cat Quest games, there's room for these cat and dog themed voice lines, is what you're saying. It's very thematic.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it.
So awesome. I did just download it though, by the way.
I 100% did. I was like in the transaction period while we were talking about it. I was like, I have to see this in action.
Yeah. I mean it's better than Cat Quest 1, and I haven't even played Cat Quest 1, so you know.
You can only assume. I mean, come on. You know.
Phil, I remember I think it was early. No, it was actually when we started working together, you mentioned you have a Steam Deck.
Yeah.
How do you like that? How do you like your Steam Deck?
It is pretty, it's pretty cool. I grew up in a household where it was like mostly like handheld games. So for me, Like, I mean, of course, you know, I had some consoles, you know, here and there, but, you know, like the Steam Deck is like, I feel like I'm in the year 3000 with that fucking thing. Cause it's like, I got all my Steam games on there and, you know, with, you know, I do a little bit of emulation too. Like I have a bunch of games on like the PS2, Game Boy Advance, GameCube, whatever. I'm so terrified of like ruining the discs on those things that, yep. You know, I like to, you know, run some of that through my Steam Deck, and you know, with some troubleshooting, it's pretty easy. So yeah. It's like a lot of fun, you know, playing, getting into all that stuff. But really, Steam Deck just makes it so easy to like play like computer games. Like when I did play PC, it was a lot of RTS, so a lot of Command and Conquer, a lot of Age of Empires. But I really like I've been really getting into like the ARPG, like story-driven games like Disco Elysium or, you know, Planescape Torment, you know, stuff like that. That stuff is like really cool.
Yeah, really popular ones. I mean, I think you're exactly on the right track with the Steam Deck too. And you kind of like captured almost exactly how I feel about handheld gaming. Like my first foray into handheld emulation and like, you know, breaking the boundaries of a, or doing what I felt like was breaking the boundaries of a console was I had a modded PSP. If you guys remember all the way back to the PSP.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I had a modded PSP. I'd play PS1 games on there, Nintendo games on there, all that stuff. Pardon me. And, you know, I guess technically it was illegal, but it like felt illegal, you know? And I feel like I almost get that same kind of like feeling when I use my Switch, when I use my, or when I've used a Steam Deck. I don't have one, but my buddy was an early adopter. I've used his. And, you know, it kind of brings back those feelings of like, oh my gosh, I'm kind of breaking the boundaries of what is possible with a handheld console, and it has a screen and a usability or a functionality that is friendly to my old man eyes now. So it's like the best of both worlds.
And I really like the Switch too. Like the Switch is really awesome. Like I'm playing a lot of games on that as well. Actually, Cat Quest, you know, it's funny that you brought up Cat Quest because it reminds me of this game that I've been playing between my Switch and my Steam Deck called a Game Dev Tycoon. And it's basically you might have come across it, but it's like a game where you play as a game developer and you start off in like the early 1980s. And like your goal is just to build a game company by like developing new games for like different like consoles. Like you start off like with like the Commodore 64 and the PC, and then you move into the NES and then the 90s and, you know, all the way to like the PlayStation 5. And, you know, it's just kind of like it's a very, very simple game. But for me, it's like such a, you know, it's just like one of those games where it's just like a comfort. It's like a comfy game that I can just kind of zone out on. And the only reason that I like it so much is because you can name the games whatever you want. So you can have like a first person shooter called like, you know, Tony Kill Switch, and it, you know, you sell like a billion copies. Or you could just call like you know, you have a sports game called like Sweaty Underwear and it sells like a million copies. And then you have people just like, it's like Sweaty Underwear sold over a million copies. This is amazing. And you know, you get some, you know, guy just like, I want to interview you for your game, your sweaty underwear game. It's so hot right now. And, you know, they got all these different characters in there. So it's a lot of fun, you know.
That's awesome. That's awesome, man. Yeah, I mean, Jeff and I literally were just talking about this yesterday, no joke, about how people love, comfy games, right? You know, it's like it's low-key, it's casual, you're playing it from your couch, you're just having a fun time. We were talking about it, I'll relate it to like you know, the card game simulator, right, Phil? Have you seen that one? I don't know if you're on Twitch at all, or you know, spend a lot of time on, obviously spend a lot of time on Steam, but card game simulator where you literally just own a card shop and you're going through the motions of owning and expanding like a trading card shop. And I think that that sort of like simulator and tycoon and all that sort of stuff is like, you're speaking to it right there. You know, that's what people are wanting.
Yeah. And I totally get that. I think it's just, and to me, it's just like, it's even for someone like me, it's like kind of hard for me to wrap my head. But I think it's also just goes back to the fact that, like, you know, people that want to get into those games, it's like, they want it, it's like on a certain level, there is like a certain level of escapism. Like,
yeah,
you know, I may never become like the CEO of like a game company, but it's like, mm-hmm. I can play a game where I'm like that person and I'm literally starting from like a garage and then moving to like, you know, a 10 story building, you know, at the end of the game, mm-hmm. you know, with like a dozen or more people as like a team. So it's like, I think it just like, it also just kind of tickles that, you know, that thing that people want, where it's like, they want like progression, you know, in their yep. game. And even if it's something as simple as like, you know, the car wash simulator that was like really popular for a while,
mm-hmm.
there's even like, and this is funny for me because as someone who kind of worked in, did like a short stint in like HVAC, there's like VR simulations of like AC repair, you know, yep. that's like VR supported. So you can Whoa. Like hook up a VR set with like your Steam Deck and like just pretend that you're repairing someone's AC. I never really yep. got like far enough to like figure out like, you know, what the whole process was like with that. But it'd be hilarious if it was just like, I don't know, a customer yelling at you while you're repairing it, just like, you know, my AC's been out for 10 days. What are you going to do? You know,
the immersion makes you feel like you're on the job. Yeah.
Yeah, know? Totally.
I think it's so funny that like, I have a buddy of mine who, I mean, he's a farmer in the sense that like, you know, it's like a big, big farm in the Midwest and he wakes up early and he's running all the machinery and all that. And end of the day, he comes back home, and what do I see him streaming to his friends on Discord? Is Farming Simulator, you know? So I think that sort of stuff is like, again, it does. It really appeals to people who are like, I love my job, you know? I love this idea, or this is kind of a fantasy that I'm interested in pursuing. It's cool how those like almost real life concepts can, you know, yeah, take root in the gaming industry.
When we were talking yesterday, Sam, the egg game that you were talking about, the
yes. Arctic Eggs.
Yes, Arctic yes. Eggs. That's right, Arctic Eggs.
Yes. That game is so insane to me. I honestly, it's like, it's insane to me in the sense that, like, I spent, this is a guy I watch on Twitch. His name is Butt Soap, okay? So he's clearly a World of Warcraft streamer. And he was playing, he's taking a break from playing WoW, which is what I like watching him play. And he was spending probably 30, 45 minutes, an hour playing this Arctic Eggs game. Where literally it's just you're frying food in a frying pan and going up into increasing levels of difficulty of having to fry this food. And I'm sitting there like, is he going to flip that? How's he going to get that egg over at that baking position like that? And it can be so enthralling, you know, even the simplest nonsense like that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's just, you know, and I think also, too, it's just like the key component is just like these are people that like, of course, you have like people who are like the farmer who goes home and plays a farming game. But I think you also have, and I'm just purely speculating here, like armchair speculation. But I'm sure for a lot of people that get into that stuff, it's like they want to like experience something that, you know, that they don't experience in their daily life, even if it is just as simple as like, you know, flipping them eggs. You know,
100%. I mean, we think back to as far as Flight Simulator, right? I mean, that was so popular and is still so widely popular. And while I'm sure there's a ton of pilots out there who love that game, there's thousands and thousands of people who have never flown a plane in their life who are getting to experience something like that. Or the same with the, you know, the long haul trucking games. People who have never done long haul trucking get to just have the, you know, quiet adventure of driving along the roads of America, you know, in a simulated fashion.
I think
exactly.
Yeah. I think that with the long trucker game, I would be like, I don't know, a part of me would want like some DLC, like maybe some like Mad Max situation, like a random event,
And you have to get your Walmart truck there through a Mad Max.
I think
that'd be pretty funny.
Just like some guy with a ski mask, just like, we just want the toilet paper. We don't want anything else. You leave it and you go away. You know?
I love it. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Yeah. So, Sam, what have you been working on, man, for your.
Oh gosh.
Are you still working on the Chrono Trigger? Are you doing more tutorials?
I've been working through tutorials, and I'm still working on the Chrono Trigger style RPG, right? I've been working mostly through tutorials. I ran into something today that I think I almost should have expected, but it was kind of. So I've been working on essentially making my models move, right? Like in a 3D world, making these models move for this RPG tutorial, right? The Gorky Games RPG tutorial that I've been working on.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I was not, I guess, considering was just how easy it is to get down a rabbit hole, right? And to get so far down where you almost like need to make a turnaround. So I'm kind of getting through this whole process, making, you know, my regular character crouch and walk and run and jump and all this stuff, right? And then I'm getting thinking to myself, like, what about like an NPC, right? And so I tried to start adding like an NPC and change their functionality. And then I'm realizing that making an NPC move is an entirely different set of blueprinting and different set of functionalities within blueprinting.
Yeah.
Than just making a regular character move. And then I got so far down the rabbit hole, I was gotten straight away from making the character, the actual character move.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I circled back, I was thinking to myself, like, okay, I've gone through a lot today. I've watched countless videos. I probably spent, you know, over the last week, I've probably spent, I don't know, eight hours on just watching YouTube videos of different, you know, character related things.
Yeah.
Then I got thinking to myself, like, okay, well, what happens if I need to make a character from scratch, right? Like, I can do it with the tutorial telling me how to do it, right? But can I make one from scratch? And I would get in and I would encounter some kind of hangups. Oh, I didn't do the right functionality here. I didn't do my blueprint right here. I'm Googling whatever, and ChatGPT is saving my life. But that's when I think I realized that I need to start approaching my learning a little bit differently. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Where it's like I'll do almost like shorter stints and say, okay, I've got this functionality down, or I've done what the tutorial has told me to do in terms of getting a character to do one function, right?
Yeah.
But then before kind of digging further into more, that I can want to make sure that I can go back and replicate that myself. And so that's kind of where I've been now, is trying to get back in and replicate those things myself. And, you know, through a little trial and error over the course of the last few days, you know, I've been successful in making that happen. And then I kind of went and encountered a whole new set of, issues when I'm trying to put in my own models. And,
are you finding them from Mixamo, or are you getting them from Fab? What,
you know, I've actually been finding them from a couple different resources. So I first went to Fab, right? And then I was thinking to myself, okay, well, there's a lot of paid resources here, a lot of free resources. Yeah. But I really just wanted something that I could like mess around with, right? Without having to pay for it and just kind of do some trial and error stuff.
Sure.
And so I ended up going to this place called CG Trader. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Okay. So that was new to me. And so I went on there. I was just found some animal models and stuff like that. I was messing around with this horse model and trying to get, that's how I got into the whole NPC animation rabbit hole. Right.
Yeah.
So that I was on there, I was on CG Trader, and then I was on Fab a little bit as well, just kind of looking at the overwhelming amount of stuff. I think that's the thing that I think is so, you know, is, you know, there's so many things on Fab. And then on top of that, I'm finding resources that I didn't even know about, right? On top of that, right? And then I started going on to other things, and I was getting into Reddit, right? And just seeing, you know, okay, well, what are some examples of, you know, of places that I could go, right? And I just started going down all types of different resources. And then I looped back to one I really don't think about a lot, which, you know, is almost the common sense, which is just how many resources that even the Epic marketplace itself provides, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I was all over the place and just learning so much about those files and
game development rabbit hole. Yes.
That's literally been this entire week is just rabbit hole after rabbit hole. Yeah. And just like spending so much time learning about different, you know, new things that I had never seen before.
I know that that crouching, I know right where you're at with that Gorka thing where he does the crouching and then the assassin attack. Have you gotten the assassin attack part done?
That's the part that I'm getting into that I probably would already be at if I did not spend so much of my time playing around with models and getting into Blender today. I mean, these models brought me back into Blender. It's been a whole thing, but I'm resetting and getting into progress. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I wish I had that progress. I actually had to get some canned air because I have to clean my computer. My computer is just, it's getting heated and stuff. And I know, I don't know. I just think there's a ton of dust and stuff. So I'm going to clean it out, start fresh and, you know, keep pushing forward. I am ready to start, doing the cinematics. So I have to start working on that.
Amazing. I can't wait to see how that turns out. And honestly, I probably could use, and by probably could use, I mean, if there is a light shining on my PC right now, it would be like just dust would be coming out from all the crevices. It's so bad.
Yeah.
I probably haven't cleaned it in like 5 months.
Yeah. I don't know if it's that or if it's a Windows update where as I'm working on it, sometimes my second monitor will just turn black and then turn back on. It's really annoying though. So,
okay. So, I mean, I would say that, you know, I mean, could be any type of issue. I wonder if that's the same thing that I'm experiencing because I've had some where it's like, I'll have to like plug it back in, you know, exactly. Whatever.
Exactly.
And I honestly, like, I can't survive without my second monitor. I know
you're probably seeing that. I use it constantly for, especially when you're developing in the game, you need that second monitor, whether it's looking up research while you have the other monitor with a, you know, with the Unreal Engine on it.
And that's pretty much what it is, you know, and even sometimes I find myself spreading out my, you know, screens and whatnot. I mean, I know we all kind of go through different, you know, we'll have different issues or whatever that we experience. One of the things that I've noticed that I just kind of have to work around with Unreal sometimes is I'll be in like my blueprints, right? Uh-huh. And then, you know, you'll say, okay, you want to press play, simulate with what you've been working on, right? And nothing will. I'll have to minimize my blueprint to go back into it, right? Rather than popping up where it's supposed to. So, I find myself just spreading out and doing the best I can. But yeah, without my second monitor, I would be lost.
I agree, man. I wish I had a wall monitor sometimes. You know?
Oh my gosh, don't tempt me. I strayed into the third monitor setup for a little while. It was starting to get a little cumbersome on my desk.
Oh my god.
Yeah. A buddy of mine does four. He has the all of them on arms and everything. It's intense.
Man, he's a lucky guy, I swear.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, what are you, I know you were talking about the Steam Deck, but what are you currently playing now or what's on your horizon, man? Have you guys thought anything about what's going on in with the Switch and everything?
Well, I was planning to play Xenoblade Chronicles X Definitive Edition. Nice. It was that Wii U port that came out like 10 years ago, and they finally came out with the Switch version of it. And I'm a sucker for like open world sci-fi RPG type stuff. Mm-hmm. Even if it's like anime as hell, like I'll still get it. Like, but so I pre-ordered it last fall through the Nintendo website, and I was waiting for it because it came out like literally last month, and I was you know, waiting for it to come in the mail, and I was just like, well, where is it? And so it had been like almost 2 weeks since it had shipped. So I was just like, well, I'll just check my email real quick and just see where the shipping is at, and I checked the tracking, and apparently they had delivered it, but it was to the wrong apartment. Like, it was, they sent the FedEx guy, like, posted a photo of, like, you know, saying, like, you know, successfully delivered, and it was a door that looked exactly like, you know, my apartment door. It was in the same complex, but what was different, there was like a plant next to the door, so it was just like, I knew immediately that they had just like dropped it at the wrong door. And I was just like, how could you even do that? So I don't know, I think I'm probably just gonna have to order from Target or Amazon from now on.
Yeah,
and that was like the first time too that I'd ever like ordered from the website. So I don't know, maybe I just got really unlucky. But
that was Nintendo.com. You ordered directly from Nintendo and that happened.
Yeah, and it's probably more of a FedEx problem than a Nintendo problem, but still, it was just like, Jesus Christ, like, there's someone in this apartment complex playing with my game. And I don't know who they are. I'm just going to have to, I don't want to be the guy who's just like, you know, run into like every door, just like, do you have my Switch game? You know, so.
Yeah.
But honestly, you have to be sometimes. I mean, that happened all the time in my old neighborhood. Things would get sent to the wrong address or whatever. You know, I had people from Walmart deliveries showing up to my house all the time, knocking on the door. I'm like, I've never been the person you're looking for. I've seen you like four times. How do you not know I'm not the person you're looking for by now? But I think that's sort of just, you know, the world we live in, man. But, you know, I'm excited that you get to play Xenoblade, man. My old roommate was obsessed with that game. He so obsessed that he even actually played it on the Wii U, which is like, I mean, I can't even imagine turning on a Wii U. I did not like that console, but, you know, he toughed it out, and it's supposedly a pretty good game.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played it at all, but as someone who is a big fan of, like, Phantasy Star Online back when it was on, like, the Dreamcast and GameCube, like, as soon as I saw, like, and I mean, I missed the boat on the Wii U version, but it's like kind of like, you know, seeing like the trailers and all that stuff, just like, oh geez, this is like exactly, because I, you know, that was like one I probably ruined. I mean, I don't think I ruined the disc for my fan. Like, I have the GameCube version of Phantasy Star Online, so, you know, it's pretty, I could probably still run it, but it is like scratched to hell because I played it like all, I've probably clocked in like hundreds of hours, like in an embarrassing amount, and you know, hopefully this game doesn't take over my life like that, but at least just to, at least for just like, you know, to get that feeling back again, because, you know, it's like I'm always, you know, I think the two of you can definitely relate to this, but just like, you're always looking for that game that kind of takes you back to like that first type of game that you played, you know. Whether it's like a Chrono Trigger type game or a Fallout type game or, you know, what have you.
Division 2. I went crazy over that game.
Oh my gosh.
I just, it's like, cause you're in a whole different world, you know?
Anyway. That's the thing, you know, there's always the games that you put hundreds of hours into, you know, but, and I mean, think about like Phantasy Star Online was revolutionary for its time on a console, was unheard of, you know, and an internet adapter on a GameCube, on a Dreamcast. I mean, it was insane, you know. I spent some time on that game.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I never played the online version like once, like never. I never logged online. I had like two friends who like happened to have copies of that game, so when we would spend the night or whatever, you know, we would pop in, we would bring our like GameCube memory cards and do the swap, and we would do like split screen Phantasy Star shit, you know, for, you know, until like the wee hours of the morning. And it would be, and that was like, and I would just do that at like a friend's house. We would do that. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I never went online once. And even when I was by myself, I would just like, you know, I'm gonna play like some techno and just like, just solo, like, you know, three dungeons in a row just to kill some time. So,
That, I mean, that was an era too of like, I mean, yes, it was kind of the initiation of online gaming too, but it was also like in the era of LAN parties, right? So it's like playing split screen games, playing LAN games, you know, being at your buddy's house was a normal thing. I mean, me and my buddies, that was us with Halo. I mean, we'd have, you know, 16 kids packed into my buddy's dad's house and we would just be jamming. We'd all be bringing our CRT TVs over and our Xboxes and just going crazy and playing games all night, you know, and that sort of stuff is just, it's almost something you don't get anymore. Like I saw a post online earlier today when I was on TikTok, and it was just about someone who had recently had like a Halo LAN and a bunch of their friends came to a Halo LAN. And I was like, just look at them like, oh my gosh, this is high school all over again. And I wish that we still lived in the LAN era, but it's not quite as common as it used to be.
Yeah. The closest I ever got to like a communal like experience like that was it was at someone's birthday party, and like in Austin, Texas, like there used to be this place called Land's End, and it was in one of the major malls like in the city. But I mean I can't even remember this kid's name because like I only knew him for like 1 year in high school, but he invited me to this like birthday party or whatever, and it was at this place called Land's End, and they were all playing Halo, and I suck at those games, and it was really apparent too because like there was a kid like next to me who I think was like younger than I was, and he's just like, you suck, and just like I can't warthog like the way you do, like what are you doing, you're like grinding on the side of the bunker and like, you know, doing no scope headshots on people. I can't do it.
It's so funny how intense it can get. I remember because, I mean, we were all just a bunch of punk kids. We were just trying to play Halo. I mean, even so much as like one time we were told, go outside, go play outside. And we just brought an extension cord in the Xbox and a TV out into a field. And we played Halo in the middle of a field outside of our school. But I remember my friends saying like, awesome. Oh man, I heard, I don't know if you guys, I don't know if you guys were from the movie gallery or if movie gallery was even a thing. I don't know if that was just like a New England thing, but, you know, a movie store. Right. And so they had, like a Halo tournament, and my friends, oh, let's sign up. We're so good. We play Halo all the time. And we get there and just get absolutely schooled by people who have way more hours than us. And we're like, oh yeah, maybe we're good enough to play in our land, but we're definitely not like pro gamers by any means.
Yeah, I would just always get shot like immediately. I was just like,
have you guys, speaking of that, that's like me just trying to even start one of the online Call of Duty games. Like immediately I'm killed, like almost within 2 minutes, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm in it for the vibes. I'm always in it for the vibes. I'm 33 years old. I'm not about to be a pro gamer anytime soon.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pure vibes. And if that's pretty much what I like about anything I'm playing these.
You know, those kids who can do like kick flips and then like headshot a guy with like a pistol. Like I can't do it. Yeah. Like I don't know.
I used to see all the videos of the Fortnite kids going and building crazy, and then they'd pop some guy, and I'm like, man, I don't. And you're doing it with a controller, man. I mean, I couldn't do crazy things like that on my best day with my keyboard and mouse. So you know, I don't know. They're definitely better and faster than we are, but that's all right. At least we can still have fun.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh yeah. And so. But I think like now too, like, what I'm finding like really interesting, just as like, as someone who is not in development, but someone who just plays games, like how, you know, all of these game companies now are like migrating to like, you know, mobile game consoles or like consoles where you buy the box, but it's like a conduit into like a cloud service of some sort or a subscription-based thing. And to me, that's kind of interesting. I feel like Nintendo is sort of like the last holdout. Although with the way they're describing their like Switch 2 games, it also feels like it's like they have like one leg in the door where it's like, we're going to give you like a physical cart, but there's still like a digital key attached to it. So it kind of, it kind of almost like, it feels like a callback to like when you would buy like PC CDs, like in the late 90s to early 2000s, and you would have the product key code that you would have to put in before you can install.
Like, so the ones I definitely never had cracked versions of by any means. So, you know, I get what you're saying, man. I think that's 100% true. I think I'm like, I don't know. I'm 50-50 on this, you know. I think it's tough for me as my, you know, my boomer brain saying, like, I like my physical cards. I like owning something, right? Like, I don't like the idea that, you know, something can be revoked, like an ownership, you know, a quasi-ownership can be revoked. But I do love the convenience of being able to just, like, you know, have access to anything. I've got the Xbox Game Pass, you know. So I've definitely, you know, I've jumped in, but... No, you're not wrong. Nintendo seems to have, they're almost there, but they, it seems like in the company, they almost want to kind of keep that, you know, they it's like they have, they were built on the cartridge, and it's almost like they want to keep the cartridge in a way, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think also too, just the, like it also, I feel like the compromise right now, which is kind of like what the Steam Deck is doing, is that, you know, you can buy the game, but you can have it like live on your micro SD card as like, you know, like it's kind of like, it doesn't have to physically be like on the Steam Deck. You can just have the game saved on a micro SD card so that you can move that micro SD card, you know, to like a future, like if they ever do like a Steam Deck 2, which I'm still kind of like, I don't know. I'd like to get some more mileage out of my original Steam Deck before I even think about, you know, jumping to that next step. But it's like that option that seems to be the compromise right now. It's just like, you know, you can do like, you know, micro SD external memory, and that's sort of like where we're going with that. Yep. I have mixed feelings about it too. Like I don't I feel like the moment that it starts to like where we're 100%, like when we reach the moment when we're like 100% on the cloud and streaming, that's probably when I'm probably going to pull back on a lot of my gaming, because I'm so tethered to like the 20th century in terms of like how you play games. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, to me, like, The thing that's keeping me around is just the fact that my inner child would love the idea of a Steam Deck. Like, he would be absolutely blown away, you know, if he knew that, like, games could be played the way that they are now. So.
No, it really is incredible, you know, because, I mean, even, like, myself, you know, I got my Switch, you know, I plugged it in and I played it mostly on the TV, you know, because, I mean, in the times I have, I'm on the road, right? You know, I don't really have a lot of time to be playing a handheld game. And, you know, if I'm already on the couch, I might as well just, you know, watch it from the TV. But I was watching a friend of mine was actually playing Mario Kart on my Switch the other day. He was just kind of hanging around while, you know, I was messing around on my computer. And he was playing Mario Kart on the Switch. And then I kind of looked at the screen for the first time, or not really the first time, but really kind of like paid attention to it for the first time. And just, I mean, you're exactly right. Like, if my child, if my inner child and my young self could see what Mario Kart looks like on a portable screen now versus the 3DS or the DS version of Mario Kart that I played back in the day, I would be, you know, he would be just blown away. I mean, you know, it's just miles ahead.
Yeah, I remember playing Pong in 1980. I'm just saying. I'm a little bit older than you guys.
Hell yeah, dude. Galaga, Frogger.
Frogger, that's right.
Yeah.
Hey, Tim, did you ever have a 2600?
It's actually funny. I never had a 2600. My first console was a Sega Genesis. My father had an Atari, and by the time I was born, I don't think he had it anymore. But we had a...
You feel really good, man. Yeah.
Sorry about that. Right. We had Sega Genesis. I grew up on Sonic the Hedgehog, and then I went into... We had an NES around the same time. skipped Super Nintendo, but then I remember getting Ocarina of Time for Christmas, man. And that was really like,
right on.
That was what blew me away. But it was so, you know, I'll never forget this. This is probably one of my favorite moments in all of gaming. Was our TV was so bad, right? So we had such a bad quality TV at that point. We ended up upgrading later down the line. But after, you guys have probably all played Ocarina of Time, so this isn't new to anybody, I'm sure. But
yeah,
the first dungeon, right? You get through the first dungeon, and you're fighting the final boss, right? The Gomu or Goku or whatever her name is, right?
Like the Deku Tree boss.
Yeah, exactly. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And our TV was so bad. It was so dark. I didn't know I was in a boss room. I thought I was at the end of a dungeon, and I had been released into the world. So I was just running into a wall, thinking that I was like exploring this wide open world.
See, that's see my and it's funny that you say that, because like that was also like I had like my first console was an N64, right. And it was also, well, like, it's not like a one-to-one, but like I remember playing R-Marines, yep, for the N64 one time, and that was, yep, like a similar situation where like everything was so dark, I couldn't see anything, and I would just be trapped on the first level.
Yeah. And then I'm sure my dad was looking at me from the, you know, the end of the room being like, what the heck is this moron?
Yeah.
The boss is right there. You know, that was actually his son. And that was too, is, you know, one of the great memories I have about it is just that, you know, that was such a bonding experience between me and my dad. And one of the things that we, you know, really grew up playing together was Zelda games. Majora's Mask, which was another popular Zelda game, we played together. We played Wind Waker together, and that's sort of when he fell off and started playing a game that not a lot of people are probably familiar with, Heroes of Might and Magic, that I got him hooked on, but which is just kind of like a, you know, turn-based strategy game, and he still plays that to this day. But you know, it's cool that we have those, you know, really kind of core memories and can recall them so easily of like how we felt and how we enjoyed those games at the same time, how we just pulled the dumbest things like running into walls.
Yeah, yeah, I sucked as a gamer back then. you know,
I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm not a real gamer. But
oh my gosh.
But I like playing it. But yeah, man. And you know, I will say though, with the Switch too, like I'm sort of like, I am kind of interested to see like where that goes, because there's not, I mean, it is kind of exciting because we're getting like the Final Fantasy VII remake is getting ported onto that. And it's for someone who like remembers Final Fantasy I back on the NES, it's almost like it's come full circle. Like, Square Enix has like, or back when it was called Squaresoft, like they jumped ship to Sony, and now they're back at Nintendo again, which is like, so I don't know, to me it's just like, I don't know, I mean it's such a callback, I guess, to like the 80s, you know, when they were first starting off. So that's kind of interesting. And then I know like everyone is losing their shit because Cyberpunk 2077 is moving on there. I haven't played it yet, so, but you know, it's going to be on the Switch too, so
I haven't played it yet either, actually. And I think that was because of how broken it was right off the rip that I just like never got back to it. But
dude, I loved like the bug videos on YouTube. Like, my favorite was like some, I can't remember who it was, but like it was a video of like some guy walking like in the middle of like the city, and it was like half of the NPCs were doing T poses and like floating. Like, they looked like, so like they looked like they were going to like ascend into heaven.
You know what?
Like, it was so bizarre.
Wait, can you just imagine the head of the studio going, Bethesda, whatever, just ship it, just goddamn ship it, you know? Like, you know, they have all these bugs going on, like, you've got to make the date. Just ship it out. Who cares? We'll fix it, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's why they haven't gotten around to, or Starfield hasn't been released or whatever. I think they're being too, you know, too careful with these big games now, you know? What can we do to improve? And he's like, squash the bugs, and they throw them out the window. They're like, no.
It's just like, listen, everybody's going to have a T-pose. We're going to have everybody do a T-pose. They won't know the difference.
I love it.
I'm really thinking, right, that Project Red or whatever, the studio, that by now you would say, right, I think now would be a good time to start playing, Phil, because they've had to have worked out all the bugs by now.
Yes, I really hope so. I really, although a part of me is still just like, I hope I can just see like something like incredibly stupid. Like, I don't know, maybe just see like my my character, like, you know, get inside a car, and then like I get like a block down the road, and then my character just like spawns in the sitting position, just like floating outside of the car, but I'm still driving. I kind of hope I can see something like that, because be like, okay, I'm really getting, you know, now I'm a real gamer.
Yeah, like some of the ridiculous stuff that you like when you have a computer that's not quite good enough to run GTA 5, you know.
Yeah,
it's kind of like that experience. No, I get weird. I'm excited to see that game come out finally on Switch, because I've never played Cyberpunk either, but I'm excited to try it. And I think that, you know, I mean, there's just a lot of cool stuff that's, you know, that's in the works, right? And I'm excited to see what Nintendo can do with this. I'm skeptical like everybody else, but I'm excited to see what they can do.
I'm skeptical about them price tags. I'll tell you that. I'll tell you that right now.
I'm more than skeptical about that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Those game price tags. I'm just kind of like, okay.
So what are the new prices on those, guys? I know the Switch 2 is what, $4.99. What's going on?
So there's a lot of drama going around that, because now that the tariffs are like in effect now, Nintendo's just like, we're going to circle back to this in like a month and give a new price, you know, once we figure out, you know, what like the tax or the tariff is going to be from like Japan, because I don't know, Trump is just like, I don't know, we're going to, you know, basically it's just like the price is just going to go up. Okay. And like the, although there hasn't been a lot of talk about like what the price of the individual games are, but even before all of that, you know, tariff talk, like they're talking like $80 or $90 for a Switch 2 game, which is pretty crazy. Like, and I mean, I have a PS5, but it's like my fiance and I, like, when we're like buying games, like we wait until it's like discounted, you know, before we like pull trigger on that. And so it's like, you know, to see games that are like right off the bat gonna be like $80-$90, like I can only think of like maybe two or three games that I'd be willing to pay that much for, but it's still, it's like, it's so crazy, like I don't understand it at all.
And that's the thing, is only some games are really worth a premium, you know? I mean, yes, people will probably, and I've seen people say, yeah, I'll pay $100 for GTA 6. Sure, I'm sure I would, you know, given the amount of time I played GTA 5. I know people who, you know, they said back in the day, they, you know, when it was $60, you know, it would have been a Skyrim or Oblivion, you know, hundreds of hours. So I don't know. I think there's something out there.
Yeah, I really, I don't know, man. We'll see. I mean, I feel like Nintendo, it's just like, they'll just do it because they can. I feel like it really is literally
here's my take on it, man. I almost feel like they're trying to push everyone to go through these cloud subscription services.
Yeah. So
if they make the actual physical products so expensive, but hey, if you join our subscription model, you can get any of these games, you know. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a little conspiracy theory there, but
I mean, I almost feel like that's how it was with the Xbox Game Pass, you know. I mean, I never would have spent $60 a game on so many different things, but you know, I can play Deep Rock Galactic or whatever with my buddy on a weekend for 2 hours and not feel bad about never picking it up again because I'm paying $5 a month.
Wait, Sam, excuse me. We have a Brandon Bickles here on the line. Hello, Brandon.
Hello there. Hi, I'm listening to your podcast live, and I needed to call in.
Thank you.
I needed to. I'm a GameStop manager. That's who I am.
Oh, geez.
So you probably have heard a lot about the Switch 2 so far then.
I've been hearing a lot of rumors, but I got the inside scoop on everything. And listen, I'm going to tell you, I think, you know, everyone's saying that like these Switch 2 games are like $80, $90. They say that is ridiculous. And you know what? I agree. I think they should be $160 per cartridge.
What? Maximum profit. I love it.
You know,
Nintendo, think that's definitely controversial.
I think, you know, my store, my GameStop store, I charge everything, like, because you got to make money. So that's why we're doing every Switch game, every Switch 2 game is going to be $160. Just $160. I don't care who you are. Huh. You're going to pay that much money.
Kind of steep, Mr. Bickles.
You know what? Miyamoto-san, you know, he has a vision. And Bowser, the CEO, the new CEO, Doug Bowser, he says he wants to put smiles on everyone's faces. If you watch the interview on CNBC, he says he wants to put smiles on everyone's faces. And I'm just like, you know, make those smiles be dollar signs, you know.
And I think even more so, you're saying $160 for a new game, $170 used, right? A tax because you should have gotten in from the start.
Exactly. That's 100%. And, you know, we can go even higher because they will pay for it. Mario Kart is going, the new Mario Kart, I'm going to charge, you know, exclusive pricing, $200. $200 for the price.
These prices keep going up. I mean,
it's inflation. It's okay. Inflation.
Okay.
You know, I got the inside scoop. I read a post on Reddit, and someone was saying, you know, it was the commenter was Tony Baloney, 23, and he said, you know, inflation is going to go up 200%. And it's just like, I have to get ahead of this. I have to get ahead. You know? Yeah.
Right, as we all know, Reddit is a reliable source.
Yes. And I have to get off the line because I have to go immediately and start, you know, just changing all the prices on everything. I'm raising the prices on everything. I gotta go. I have to get out of here.
Thank you, Mr. Bickles. Thank you for sharing your thoughts there at GameStop.
Jesus Christ. What was up with that guy?
GameStop really has been in the news a lot. I think it'll continue to be in the news if that's the case.
Yeah. Man, Mr. Bickles, out of control.
Yeah. I mean, I wish him luck. I don't know. I mean, they've been closing a lot of GameStop. So, I mean, that's probably like a Hail Mary for that guy, you know.
I mean, it makes sense. The one near me pretty much only sells Pokemon cards with some games on the side. So, you know, I believe it.
I mean, it's like
do a Funko Pop like seller with a few games. Really?
Exactly. I swear
though, every GameStop that I've been into, it's like 50% Funko Pop and like graphics.
For real, dude. But gaming is their hobby. It's like their side hustle, you know?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But it's a nostalgia. I still get nostalgia going to the GameStop. Like, I was the kind of person, no joke, who, like, I was camped out for my Xbox 360 for 12 hours in front of a GameStop. I remember that I can't remember what I was camping out for one time there. Oh my gosh. I think it was some game. I can't remember. And I'm camped out there. Me and my buddies all got our lawn chairs. We got our snacks. We got everything. You know, our parents dropped us off. And we were like, let's go in and buy a game that we can all play on our DS together. And that way we have something to keep us busy while we're waiting for this other game to be released. So definitely spend a lot of time there. And I will say I took a lot of advantage of the GameStop rental program. Back in the day, you used to be able to get a used game and you would get your full refund if you returned it within a week. So me and my buddies would buy games and then beat them in a week and return them.
Yeah,
so we probably contributed to the problem that GameStop is experiencing now.
It's so weird. I never took advantage of it, but I did have, like, I think for 1 year, I was subscribed to, like, their membership program.
Yep.
And it was right around the time that Metal Gear Solid 4 had come out. And I think I subscribed to the program. Yeah, it's just like, I think I like subbed to it just so I could get like the exclusive like pre-order for that game. Because I still have it somewhere, but it was like it came in like a really nice like case, like a folder case. Mm-hmm. And it had like the soundtrack and the main game in there and like a little art book. And I think I just subbed just for that. And then I like canceled it because I don't know. I wasn't like a big game fan of GameStop. There was just, I think also too, it just like, I had like some bad experiences. Like I'll buy like I would buy a game and it would be defective. It'll be like, well, we'll trade it in for like a different game. And it's just like, well, can I just like get like another game that's exactly like that one? It's just like, well, that's like our only copy, so you know, pick another one or do store credit. So I, you know, I'm kind of just like whatever about
the store credit was like 25 cents too, so it's
you were never
coming out on top with anything.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh,
anytime I sold my games back, it was like just for nothing basically.
It's just like, You got Tekken 4. I can only give you $3.
Yeah. And it was like a new car. It was like you didn't even take it out the door if you wanted to. You could have the receipt in hand, walk out the door, and they'd still give you like a tenth of the price.
Oh yeah. They should have been on honestly, they could have just spun off like Pawn Stars and just done like GameStop. The History Channel.
Like, that's probably where they got the idea for Pawn Stars. They're like, oh man, GameStop's got this scam figured out. All right, let's do this.
Oh my god.